Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you to the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by three folks from Southwest Behavioral and Health Services. Linda Reifert is the marketing director. Nicole Hine is a social worker and works in training and development. And Cindy Webb is the coordinator of learning and development. You're also a program administrator for the peer support program. We're going to learn more about all of those things, but I wanted to start by welcoming you to Business Radio X. Thanks for being here.
Thanks
for having us.
Linda, tell us a little bit about the organization itself. Southwest Behavioral and Health Services, what role do you play and how does the organization serve the community?
My role with Southwest, oftentimes we call it SBH, is the marketing director. I've been there for almost 19 years now. And what Southwest does is we're an integrated healthcare organization in Arizona. We've been here for over 40 years. And we have several different programs like school and community-based services, outpatient services, opioid treatment clinics, and we have a what we call a SACE program, which is our Southwest Autism Center of Excellence, which opened in October, not this past year, the year before. We just celebrated our one-year anniversary. Services for adults, kids, families,
residentials.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah,
marvelous. And so on. So, yeah, we kind of run the gamut.
That's great. I think not everybody realizes the important role that nonprofit organizations and others play in healthcare, especially in mental health. Talk a little bit about some of the specific programs that people are able to participate in and give us a sense of how that work unfolds in someone's daily life.
So it depends on what program we're really talking about, but in outpatient, we serve people with general mental health concerns. So there are how many clinics in the Valley?
Five
clinics in the Valley that anybody can go to. So things like anxiety, depression, substance use concerns, they can get help with that. The outpatient clinic, you can get med services there. Since we're integrated, you can get physical health services as well. The whole cool thing about integrated healthcare is it's sweeping the nation, and really it's a one-stop shop for anybody to receive services. So before integrated healthcare, they were kind of popping around. You had to go see your doctor at one clinic, and then you went and saw your therapist at another. So now it's just a one-stop shop.
And those providers didn't talk to each other. There wasn't kind of a coordination of care, and that posed a lot of, that siloing of professions really impacted the quality of the services that people are able to get. Now, Arizona has been a leader in bringing integrated mental health, behavioral health, and physical health together, but obviously your organization predates some of those initiatives. You've been doing this a long time. Nicole Hine, you are a licensed social worker, and you also have a master's in public administration. Talk a little about your own professional journey and how you ended up in the role you have today.
Okay, sure. So I moved out to Arizona to get my master's in social work, and ASU actually has a dual program where you can kind of explore the public administration realm as well. So I got my first job at Southwest Behavioral and Health Services, and really they've given me my career. It's a fabulous company, and so while I was in school, I got to kind of get my feet wet, if you would, with residential behavioral health treatment, and really got to just see a bunch of different sites in the Valley. We have over 40, probably more than that now, residential treatment facilities, and so I just really loved working with adults with severe mental illness, and then I kind of got into training because I wanted to see how much more of an impact I could have via changing policies and procedures for the company, and just really training our therapists and our frontline staff to to provide better services.
Are you still actively seeing clients and patients, or are you working primarily on the training and the administration project management side of things?
Yeah, so since this was new for me, I've been in the role for about 3 years. I decided not to see clients right away, but it's something I might do in the future if time permits.
Marvelous. Thank you. I look forward to hearing more about it. Cindy Webb, you are the coordinator of learning and development, and you're also a program administrator for the Peer Support Program. We'll talk more about that program and others in a minute, but tell us a little about your work and kind of the role you play at Southwest Behavioral and Health Services.
Well, I've been with the company for 6 years. I moved out here 6 years ago. So this is actually my first job in Arizona.
So both of you, this is your first job.
We Amazing. Started around the same time.
Yep. And so, before I came here, I was a practice manager for 12 years in medical health. So internal medicine and on OBGYN. I was also a medical assistant. So I was really on the medical side of things. So when I came here, I was really wanting to get into the behavioral health field because my daughter's bipolar and my first husband had died by suicide. So behavioral health is near and dear to my heart. So I had different roles throughout the last 6 years at the company as a front office supervisor and a risk management coordinator. Now I'm in the coordinator position for learning and development.
You know, I think that mental health and wellness in general is one of these phenomena is the right way to say it, I guess, that touches everybody's lives in a way. And yet there's a lot of stigma associated with it. So people aren't talking openly about some of the challenges they're experiencing or that they're dealing with members of their family or their community. And you know, obviously your own personal journeys played an important part of the work you're doing today. What's your sense of things in terms of mental health and behavioral health more generally? Is that changing now, or are we still dealing with an environment where people's ability to even raise their hand and say, I need help, is being limited because they're afraid of the judgment and so on from family, from peers, from the world?
You know, we've come a long way when it comes to a stigma regarding mental health. You know, it's all about people in the community being educated, right?
Yes.
If you have people that understand what mental health is about and different diagnoses, other people that have those issues, those mental health issues, would feel comfortable coming forward. And a lot of times people that do have mental health issues, they're afraid of the disorder themselves. And they're still themselves not educated about what's going on in their life.
You know, it seems there's an interesting parallel. I'm a PhD, not an MD, but I'm fascinated with human beings and how things play out in our lives. There's a parallel between medical health, where you can have these kind of lingering, almost slow burn problems that don't get addressed until there's a crisis. You know, people can live shockingly unhealthy for a long period of time and still function, even though the quality of their life and their experience may be greatly diminished. Mental health is much the same. People may not realize that some of their ups and downs and sideways experiences are in fact indicators of something which might lead to a crisis. And of course, you know, it doesn't help that we only hear about workplace related mental health in moments of terrible breakdown. You know, the real tragedies and things that can happen. And now all of a sudden we talk about it, but only as long as the story is in the news cycle. Obviously the people who had to deal with that incident have a very different relationship to it. But to talk a little bit about this phenomenon of the fact that there's a lot of background things happening in a person's life. They may not even realize that this is a mental health issue and that, like a physical health issue, it's something that they can get support for.
Yeah. Anxiety is a big one, right? Because the median, I would say, time frame, I guess, for somebody to see a doctor or to get help for anxiety is 30 years. So somebody can live with anxiety for 30 years before they really understand that, hey, I have anxiety. Maybe this is an issue for me, right? Because they've been living their life the way they've been living it, right? Thinking that's a normal thing for them.
Yeah.
And so they just come to adapt to it.
Or knowing it's not normal, yeah. but not knowing what to do about
how to handle it, who to talk to about it. If they talk to a loved one, the loved one saying, oh, you're overreacting or you're so emotional.
Right. Or, you know, tough it out. Like, look on the bright side. You know, if someone's feeling sad or depressed and can't function, you know, being told, like, well, just pick yourself up is not necessarily helpful.
Or bringing it around back to the stigma thing.
Bringing it around to the stigma thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think since we're on the topic of stigma, you know, when we see big crises happen, like shootings or, you know, we're seeing that more and more today. I think that the message behind that is really how common mental illnesses are. And people aren't aware that nearly 1 in 5 adults live with a mental illness. So that's really important that we have this discussion about, hey, this is happening to everybody, not just people that are, you know, shooting.
Right, exactly. And I think that's the, first of all, beginning to mainstream some of these conversations about the very pervasive nature of some of these issues is helpful for people to realize, like, oh, okay, so it's not that I'm a bad person. I'm not a moral degenerate.
Dangerous, scary.
Exactly. I'm just a person navigating through life in this world like everyone else and with challenges, right? Talk about some of the specific programs that are available. I know that SBH has the mental health first aid course, which is fascinating. I want to understand more about that. And you also have the peer support specialist training. So let's start with mental health first aid. What a fascinating concept. What is that and why is it important?
Yeah, so this is a training that actually was created in 2001 in Australia. The couple that created it, their names are Betty Kitchener and Anthony Jorm. And really, they recognized the need for first aid training in the area for mental health. So there's a parallel between, just like you said, Adrian, between physical health and mental health concerns. So just like people need to learn the basics to help somebody in need when they have a physical issue and provide that first aid care, someone with a mental health concern can benefit from first aid care as well. It's the same thing. It's just a different, it's happening in the brain rather than the body. So the National Council for Behavioral Health was given permission to reproduce and update this copyrighted material that this couple created to train mental health first aid instructors in the U.S. and spread this knowledge to anybody interested.
You know, it makes so much sense to me because we're all familiar with first aid training. We had even some exposure to it in elementary school, middle school, and so on. And, you know, most people are aware that there's CPR training that, you know, can make someone more effective in stabilizing a situation until the first responders get there. But the idea that there's mental health first aid and that there's things you can do and say, I imagine, in a crisis moment to hold the line until the professionals get on the scene. Is that the idea that you're really providing this basic set of tools? I mean, I'm remembering the triangle bandage, the gauze, the thing, you know, put pressure here, like
yeah.
that kind of physical first aid. What are some of the, you know, interventions is makes it sound very fancy, but what are some of the things people learn to do in the training?
Sure. So there are two trainings that Southwest actually offers. One is adult mental health first aid, and the second is youth mental health first aid. So adult mental health first aid covers important statistics about mental health concerns in the U.S., things like how common are they, what does a mental health issue look like, how does it develop? You know, we were talking about how long things can go unnoticed and uncared for, and that's when things can have a chronic effect on a person. So the earlier we catch it, the better. So we talk about that. We talk about specifics about depression and anxiety, suicidal thoughts, and non-suicidal self-injury. A lot of people don't know what the heck that is. So one example might be burning, cutting, bruising yourself. We talk about psychosis and substance use. So it's kind of broken down into those 5 sections. The big part of mental health first aid is learning a 5-step action plan called ALGI. It's an acronym. And so that's really where we're providing this 5-step action plan until either the person seeks professional treatment from a counselor, a social worker, you name it, or is the crisis is resolved themselves.
So this is a course that members of the public or employees, people who work in a business or a school can participate in. What does the training actually entail? How long does it take to participate in the mental health first aid course?
Yeah, courses normally last 8 hours a day with an hour for lunch. However, the course can be split into 2 4-hour sessions, and it's best to have the 2 4-hour sessions either be back-to-back or within the same week just for adult learning. You know, we can't retain as much if they're spread way out.
So a single 8-hour day or 2 4-hour sessions, preferably back-to-back.
Mm-hmm, correct.
Fascinating. And what are the types of people who should be paying attention to this? And I'm imagining either people who would benefit from this training or people who lead organizations that need to put some of their staff through the training. Who is this really for, and who do you want to know more about it?
You know, anybody can take mental health first aid. That's the beauty of the training, and I think everybody should. Specifically for Southwest, I think we have the most interest in businesses. So any businesses out there for your staff, you know, spreading awareness about helping our colleagues out and supporting our teams. Also, I don't know if you've heard of the Mental Health First Aid Awareness Grant through SAMHSA.
I haven't. What is that all about?
So Southwest Behavioral Health was awarded this back in September, and that grant runs through 2021. The goal there is to provide youth mental health first aid training to 1,000 adults working with youth in settings like schools, hospitals, community settings in the greater Phoenix metro area. Our organization, of course, plans to surpass that goal of 1,000, and we hope to spread the great training to teachers, school personnel, coaches, youth group leaders, caregivers, first responders, and hospital staff working with youth.
You know, this makes so much sense. I mean, if you think about, you can't be a camp counselor or, you know, work in a summer program in the community center or, you know, without getting some basic first aid and CPR certification. People know to ask for that sort of thing. And employers and schools and other organizations that serve the public know to provide that kind of training. But this is something that people might not realize is essential. How is Southwest Behavioral and Health Services getting the word out about this? Maybe Linda, as the marketing director, you could speak a little bit to some of the efforts to not only promote the training, but to raise awareness of the issues that the training addresses.
Yes, as part of the SAMHSA grant, the Mental Health First Aid SAMHSA grant, one of the big pushes that we're doing right now is pushing it out to our schools. We're in several school districts throughout the Valley and in Prescott Valley, throughout Arizona. But we're basically right now pushing it out to the school. So we're meeting with school staff, working with them to kind of educate them on what the training is and encourage them to have their staff take it. As well as we, aside from that, just on a general basis, we push the training out as much as we can. I think it's interesting, especially when you look at the school piece. One component of the youth mental health first aid training, kind of going back to what you were saying, Adrian, about the importance. One component of the youth mental health first aid training is the Kevin Hines story. I don't know if you've ever heard of Kevin Hines.
Why don't you share that with our audience so everyone can
absolutely benefit. It's an extremely impactful story. Kevin Hines was, I believe, 19 years old when this happened. He jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. Obviously, his plan was to die by suicide. He's one of the few people who did not die upon impact. And now he tells his story, not only in the youth mental health first aid training, we see videos of him throughout the training day, we hear about his story, but he's also a huge mental health advocate right now. And he goes out, and I've actually seen him at 2 events that Southwest has attended in the past and heard him speak, and it's phenomenal. He's also got a book out called Cracked, Not Broken about his experience. But the point being that it goes back to what you were saying about how important it is for adults to know how to talk to people, because a lot of the things Kevin says throughout the video and the training is that had his dad known, his dad went to him that morning and said, I feel like something's wrong with you. Do you want to come to work with me? So his dad tried, but he didn't know really the questions to ask or the things to say. So Kevin went on as if he was going to go to school, went to the Golden Gate Bridge, was hoping that someone along the way would ask him what, you know, if he needed help, and nobody did. And he made a pact with himself, if nobody asks me, I'm going to jump. And nobody did, and he jumped.
You know, I moved here from the Bay Area and very familiar with the bridge. Used to, you know, run and bike across it, and there are signs all along the bridge. There's a hotline, there's a phone. But what's fascinating about Kevin's story is he wasn't looking for a hotline. He wasn't looking for a phone number. He was looking for a human touch, a human connection. You know, I've seen some of his video clips on Facebook, and it's these edge cases, these kind of extreme stories that in a way shine a light on the everydayness of this phenomenon. There's a lot of folks who are really struggling and don't live near a bridge, or, you know, aren't at the point where they're developing a plan to end their life, but they are hurting and they do need help. And changing the conversation around mental health and mental health awareness is so important. You know, the other part of that story, which gets less told, is the story of his father and what it was like knowing that he missed that day, right? And that it could have ended very differently. And of course, countless parents have a very different ending to that story and have to live with the aftermath and so on. It's heavy stuff. And at the same time, I think finding ways to make it more understandable to people, it seems to be really critical. Cindy, in your role as coordinator of learning and development, one of your many tasks is helping support the training of the folks who deliver a variety of programs and services. Talk to us a little bit about the kind of people who you work with every day and kind of what they're bringing to the table, their commitment and their vision for their work.
Well, I work with all the staff, really, at SBH, counselors, case managers, nurses, peer support specialists, just a plethora of people of different positions. And they bring all kinds of things to the table, their lived experience as well as their professional experience. Consumers as well I work with. They come in and do the peer support specialist training that we'll be talking about later because they're wanting to educate themselves more and educate society.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a critical role. Let's talk about that program, the peer support specialist training. What is a peer support specialist anyway? What kind of expertise do they gain through that training?
Well, I guess I could start with the term peer. A peer is someone who can identify within some way, be it age, sexual orientation, a shared language. When we talk about a peer in behavioral health or in the medical world, a peer is a person who can share their lived experience of being in recovery. So they really understand what this other person that they'll be helping with is going through at the moment. It could be anything from a psychiatric disorder, a substance use disorder, or even a physical illness like diabetes or cancer.
So that's the important dimension of the peer. Isn't it that the individual, the client has somebody who they view as a peer, somebody that they can relate to because of their story, because of their shared experience, because of their background, because of any number of infinite dimensions of identity, they can identify with this person. How do these peer support specialists find their way to you, and how do you help develop them and put them to work?
Well, it all comes from the consumers, the clients that are already part of SBH getting services. I reach out to the agency asking the staff if they have any clients that are wanting to share their story, wanting to help other peers at SBH or in the community themselves, and they can come to the training. And it's 64 hours. It's 8 days. They sit through PowerPoint presentations, videos. They share their own story. They talk about how to use their story to help somebody else, their self-disclosure. There's limited self-disclosure because you don't want to tell your whole story to somebody. You want to just give them the right amount of information to help them in their path and their journey. peer support's really important because they offer a emotional support and a mentorship. They can provide community resources that another peer wouldn't even know is out there that exists. And they advocate for them in many different ways.
You know, I love what you said about the self-disclosure and really training people in how and when to share. Because the simple fact of having gone through something yourself does not automatically mean somebody else going through it wants to hear your version.
Correct.
and in my parallel life, I work with business leaders and business owners on personal storytelling. Now, a very different context, but one of the things I really want to get those folks to understand, sounds like there's some parallels here, is that the most valuable thing you can do is share pieces of your story when it's appropriate and in a way that is not about you. You're sharing your story so that somebody you're interacting with hears themselves in your story. In other words, it's a personal anecdote that is in some way universal because it's about something the other person can relate to. How do you do that training? I mean, this is a much more significant investment of time on behalf of the trainees. 64-hour training as opposed to the one-day or two half-day trainings for the mental health first aid. What are some of the things that happen in the training that, beyond the information in the PowerPoints, helps develop the kind of soft skills, the empathy, the connection, the communication that must be so essential to being effective in this role?
Well, when the learners come in and they get a gist of what this program is about. We talk about how important it is to connect to another human being on the same level because we have to meet them where they're at, right at that time.
Yes.
So there's different core curriculums that we cover. We go by SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's curriculum. We'll talk about trauma-informed care, LGBTQI issues, mindfulness, mental health first aid. They get a certificate as a mental health first aid trainer in this program as well. Cognitive behavioral therapy, resilience and recovery, which is very, very important in somebody's life, recovery, right? And integrated care.
Marvelous. You know, I just keep coming back to this core idea that changing the conversation in society as well as in communities, in schools, in companies, in families is so essential. You know, we've all inherited so many ideas about mental health, and we've all had a variety of experiences, either of our own personally or with people, significant people in our own lives. And yet, a basic framework for simply understanding that this is a human phenomenon that touches so many people seems still to be missing. The parallels with substance abuse addiction recovery programs are really quite striking. In other words, finding ways to change the conversation and the empathy meter, if you will, to understand what this human being was going through that had the addiction make perfect sense to them at the time, be a solution to the problem that they were having at the time, and then finding ways to support them through recovery in learning some of the fundamental things we'd never were taught in school about how to take care of ourselves and how to really cultivate a connection with ourselves and others and the world seems to be so important. I mean, on the one hand, I love that there's this 64-hour training. And on the other hand, it's not enough. There's so much richness to this. One of the things that's often discussed in the professional mental and physical health world is the idea of evidence-based training. That's become something of a mantra for the past decade or something like that. Is there evidence that this stuff works?
Yes. There's so much evidence regarding peer support, and it also ties into mental health first aid. So there's studies, there's research, there's articles. You can find it in the Psychiatric Times, SAMHSA's website, American Journal of Psychiatric Medicine, Peers for Progress, Mental Health America, many, many other places you can find all this research. There was evidence for peer support that Mental Health America put out an article in May 2018, and it touched on a lot of things. For example, there's reduced rehospitalization rates that happens if somebody has a peer support or a peer mentor, not just in mental health, but in physical health as well. For example, Optum Peer Bridger program served 125 people and had 79.2% reduction in hospital admissions year over year, resulting in $550,000 in savings. 100% of consumers had been hospitalized prior to having a peer coach, and only 3.4% were hospitalized after getting a peer coach.
I mean, those are phenomenal numbers. It also strikes me, another parallel of just connecting dots over here for myself is with the role of a trained doula in birth. You know, there's fabulous research showing that the mere presence of an experienced doula in the birthing environment, even if she is not hands-on in any way and actively involved in the birth itself, changes the outcomes for the better. I mean, this is something that I think is staring us right in the face. This idea that peers of any kind, whether it's women supporting women in birth or people supporting people in recovery, the idea that having peers as part of the process seems to be so obvious. And so, and it's like, why didn't we think of this before? Do you get pushback with regard to this? Or does everybody just kind of have an aha moment and say, well, of course, this makes obvious sense. We need this. What are the kinds of questions that you might get if you're talking to somebody who's considering providing this training, for example, for their staff or something? What do they want to know more about? Or they don't have any questions. They simply say, this sounds fabulous. How much does it cost and how many people can you take?
I haven't heard any on my end. I've heard nothing but good things,
yeah.
and excitement. And I don't know how many you've graduated, but I see pictures of the graduating classes, and you can see the excitement on their faces, and you can see them ready to go out and help other peers.
They're very, very anxious. You know, we do it in Phoenix. We're all over Phoenix, all the way up through Lake Havasu.
Yeah.
And we have all these trainings, mental health first aid trainings and peer support trainings. Everyone, you know, the stigma is still there, right?
Yes.
But I think it's getting better as time goes by. It's just, we're just needing to have more education. And that's why we're trying to get the word out.
Let's wrap up our conversation with one last line of questioning, which has to do with folks who might be hearing about this for the first time. And let's say they are, you know, a business owner, business leader, they're an HR director, they're involved in training and development or learning and development, or they're a school administrator, someone from a nonprofit or a summer camp or any of the infinite number of places. What do they really need to understand so that they can begin to incorporate this kind of training and make it as obvious as first aid and CPR? What do we want to say to them to really communicate the value of this work? Nicole?
Yeah, I would say the brain controls your entire body. So why have we been focusing so much on the physical body and treating parts of it when the organ that controls the whole body is your brain? So we need to start with your brain first, and everybody has one. And therefore, many people, it's very common to see somebody with a mental health concern, anxiety, depression. Some of the more severe ones would be bipolar, then your psychotic disorders where they're hearing and seeing things or having delusions. So regardless of the caliber of the diagnosis, it's very common to see somebody with mental health concerns. And there is a very easy way to take action to ask the right questions and say, hey, you know, I noticed that you're looking a little different than usual. Do you need somebody to talk to you? You know, and if the person says no, you stay back. But hey, let them know I'm always here if you want to open up about those concerns. And so really what you learn in mental health first aid and peer support are those people skills. You know, it's not like we're going to be teaching rocket science in the trainings. There's a very practical and easy five-step approach to helping anybody that's in need.
Well, it sounds to me like the kind of thing that everyone should avail themselves of. Where do people go to learn more about these trainings and to sign up for the courses?
Well, they can go to our external website. It's www.sbhservices.org/HR-training.
Great. And they can find that probably from the main website as well. So go to sbhservices.org and look for the training.
Yep. And they can find mental health first aid on there. They can find CPR on there. And they can find peer support on there.
Well, that's marvelous. I want to thank you all for the work that you're doing. This is such an important part of changing people's experiences of themselves, their lives, their families, their worlds. Let's end with one final thing. What are you excited about? What's on the horizon that's coming your direction that has you fired up? Obviously, some of this is a slog. I mean, this is hard work. It's challenging. You're managing an organization. You got a lot of activity, but there's things that keep you lit up and excited. What's inspiring you, or what are you looking forward to, Nicole?
I'm looking forward to just all the people that can be impacted through learning this simple 5-step approach to helping a person. Finally, we'll have people that are feeling more connected, feeling more at ease with asking questions about mental health, and it won't be that taboo topic that means we're going to lock somebody up in an institution eventually.
Yes, absolutely. And Linda, you've been with SBH for more than 18 years. What's keeping you going? What's motivating you? And what are you excited about in the future?
SBH has just been a wonderful company to work for me since day one. I'm really excited, and we're on this topic now. I'm so passionate about mental health first aid and touching people and helping people through and helping them to know the right things to say. And one of the things that people have asked me a lot of times is, well, mental health first aid, that sounds like something clinical. Like, why would I go to that? And when I tell them, yes, we do train clinical staff, but really the community members need to know and the school staff need to know. We want to get this out as much as possible. Just one quick segue. They recently announced Lady Gaga's Born This Way Foundation has been a part of the mental health first aid through National Council. And they just announced that they are going to start a teen mental health first aid to help teens talk to other teens on the same topic.
Yes, so, I'm so excited
yes,
about that.
So I'm really excited about all that. I'm excited to continue on with this grant and the pieces that we've already been doing with mental health first aid and getting it out to more people.
Yeah, one of the good things about the Born This Way campaign is that historically, mental health first aid has been for adults. So anybody 18 and up can take the training. The adult training, you'd be helping adults with mental health concerns. The youth training is for adult caregivers to help anybody ages 12 to 18. Now there's this new wave where we're recognizing, well, adolescents can help other adolescents, right? And so no longer are we just looking at adults that can reach out and say, hey, do you need help? What's going on? You want to talk? Now it's teens that can do that as well.
And they can do it the right way and not the way they think they are.
That's marvelous. I mean, it's so important and it will touch so many lives. Cindy Webb, what are you excited about in the future? What's on the horizon for you that has you lit up as you move forward?
Well, we have many peer support programs going on now throughout the state of Arizona starting in April. I'll be having probably about 10 through the end of the year. And just the SAMHSA grant, getting the word out for mental health first aid. Let's be proactive, not reactive.
That's marvelous. Well, again, thank you, Nicole, Cindy, Linda, for joining us in the studio here today. It's been a pleasure, and this is a conversation that everybody needs to hear. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having us.
Again, the website for Southwest Behavioral and Health Services is sbhservices.org. Please go there. Please support the work they're doing. Please see if any of this training is a good fit for you. For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and we'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.